Welcome to the newest, for now, RTFM. Class is in session. Professor Max Lander.
Wow.
Is here. What's the word they use for judges in America? Judge, whatever. Who cares? It's not important.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
I am Aaron King still. We're winging this one.
We are.
It's the day after Christmas.
Sometimes known as Boxing Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this is our promised, I don't know, did we have a name? We should have a name for this series. That's why I was like, classes in session.
Bad D&D Brain is not enough. We secretly call it Bad D&D Brain behind the scenes, so now we can call it Bad D&D Brain in front of the scenes.
We'll call it Bad Brains as an ode to the famous punk band. Because we'll probably get into other bad brain types as well.
It's true. It is us. We have our own bad brains. We have bad D&D brains, bad dual brains. It's a theme.
Yeah. The Bad Brains originally formed in 1976 as a jazz fusion band under the name Mind Power. Maybe that's what we'll call this.
Mind Power. Yeah, great. Good. Into it.
All right. So this is a loosely defined idea that we will develop as we talk. But basically, D&D teaches you a certain type of gaming. And I would extend this to, like, you know, White Wolf games and other kind of trad 80s, 90s games that informed the D&D lifestyle today. And some of those things that it teaches become assumed parts of all RPGs and prevent you from having fun with other RPGs. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah. I think, like, prevent you. I think there's a bar, a hurdle in meeting RPGs where they want to be met when you go in from D&D.
Right. It's like that Boss Baby tweet. Man who has only seen Boss Baby, but instead of who sees another movie, but instead of saying, getting a lot of Boss Baby vibes from this, he would say, I hate this movie because it doesn't have Boss Baby in it. Movies need to have Boss Baby. Otherwise, they're not good movies.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a lot of like smooshing of other games into the structure of D&D that makes other games seem worse than they are. Or attempts to smush them into the structure of D&D. Which also, like, if you love the D&D structure, this is arguably not the podcast for you, but certainly not the episode for you.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I think part of what we're going to get into is, like, it's not that you can't play D&D or shouldn't play a game in the style of D&D. It's that you should mix it up and accept other games on their own terms. And if you try to cook stir fry like a pizza, it's not going to taste good. You should learn to cook other things and not just frozen pizza.
Yeah. I guess D&D is the frozen pizza of the culinary world. That feels good.
Yeah.
Feels accurate.
Like, look, I made this frozen pizza good by putting a bunch of fresh vegetables and spices on it. It's like, you could just have a different kind of food that already has that. I love putting vegetables on a frozen pizza. Just get the cheapest one and put a bunch of banana peppers on there. I'm not judging. We've all been there.
Yeah, we literally have. A large part of the interest in this is both, like, you know, we've been chatting with some folks in the Discord, and there's been some, like, discussion about and some interest in talking about this, but also, like, we both have played a lot of D&D. This isn't like, oh, we hate D&D from the outside. It's like, I spent over a decade of my life playing D&D. Bi-weekly or whatever, and like, it took me a long time to get rid of bad D&D brain. I still occasionally have bad D&D brain.
Yeah, it happens. We develop in certain ways. We get into habits, mental habits. I have a rough agenda, but I don't want to just, like, monologue. We kind of started
this. This agenda hasn't been shared with me, so I'm.
Well, it's my agenda, my personal brain agenda, my good brain. I had to write my good brain down.
I only have the gay agenda, so
to keep it separate from the bad brain. So I think I want to start by talking about Reddit, and
wow,
Every day when I'm at work, I go to reddit.com/r/RPG because I'm bored. And also, I just want to keep in touch with what the people are saying about role-playing games. And there are a number of posts that come up every week, if not every day. And I think a lot of them get at the tensions that we are going to be talking about. One I see a lot is, I want a rules-light game that has a lot of character options. And another one is, I want fast cinematic combat, but I still want it to be turn-based, where the bad guys roll to hit. And I think those are my starting points. Those are who I'm speaking to, because I think character options are fun. We all like to build weird characters. And I think tactical combat can be fun. But putting those things together, you end up with a lot of rules. And it takes a lot of time for a GM to prep. And turns can last a long time. And you can get into like rules mastery versus casual players. And so I think where I want to start is, maybe you don't want lots of character options. And kind of the point I got to thinking about all this, and we mentioned it in the last Patreon episode, but I want to say it in the public feed, is I think a lot of people like to disclaim decision-making to the dice. They want to roll just to see what happens. They want to roll to attack. They want to roll for initiative as like a ritual separation between combat and not. And that's DMD brain. I think there's a sense of like dice mean fairness because you're rolling and you don't know how they'll come up. And this is another thing that comes up on Reddit all the time is like, do you fudge your dice, GMs? And so what does it mean to disclaim your decision making to the dice? When is that good? When is it bad? And how do you make a structure for something that feels fair that doesn't involve just rolling to see what happens?
Yeah, I feel like part of the reason that I kind of bounced off of D&D at some point in life was largely combat. Everything in combat and D&D, and part of that is because like it didn't feel good to me that we would just like roll dice all the time to see what happened as opposed to like regardless of, oh, we've made this plan, we've like prepared ourselves, we've like done all this time, we've spent all this time kind of like building this story of how we're going into it or like what we want to have happen, and then it would just be this like, okay, let's roll to see if that works. And that's a part of every RPG, but I think there's the frequency, we've talked about this a bunch, but like the frequency with which you roll and you're like, well, that doesn't happen.
Right.
And
to me, the classic example is like, oh, I'm going to sneak up on this guy who's sleeping and kill him. And then it's like, okay, roll to hit. And it's like, what?
I feel like you used to be able to just coup de grace them. Maybe that's a three.
I think there are some, like, I think some people have tried to address it by saying like, if they're asleep, you auto hit and do 3x damage or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it is like, it is a situation where someone could just make a decision, right? Oh, this person's asleep. You naturally would kill them, but you want to live up to, you want to be honest to the rules or something. You got to roll to hit or roll damage. And it's like, oh, I rolled a one on damage.
And it just doesn't feel, I think it's just that there's too many moments like that, right? Like, in my mind, bad D&D brain is like the every time something could go wrong, people roll, as opposed to every time it might be interesting if the outcome was unsure, right? Which are very different. The D&D ethos by the book is every time something could go wrong or could fail, roll. And the reality is that everything could fail. So, like, they just, it, like, that logic can be applied every single moment. And it's so, the framing of combat and the framing of, like, initiative and turn order and all that stuff is, it's not cinematic to do 8 seconds at a time.
Right.
You know, like, and I think the argument, the counter argument is like, oh, but like a movie montage, like you're slowing time and it's like this. And I'm like, yeah. And the reason that works in film is because they use it sparingly. You know, like it's because you will get a single slowdown over a number of minutes, over a number of things happening to really highlight that something's happening. Not the whole thing happens in slow motion.
And you also know what's going to happen in a movie. The people making the movie, I mean.
Yes, yes. So they can focus on things. Highlight the actual good parts, not highlight the, and then he went to kick and his kick just hit air and it took us 12 minutes to get there, you know?
So I think, like, what we know when that feels bad, but I think not all the time, because sometimes you roll something and it's like, oh, this never would have happened, but I rolled this and then it happened. Like, that feels good. That's what gets the hooks in people, right? Like, we know why people want to leave D&D and have more cinematic combat, but they say, I want cinematic combat, but I still want to roll for initiative. I still want to, like, compile all these little plus one feats for my character options.
Well, I feel like that's a response to, like, I need to have my moment, the initiative desire. Like, one of the things we were going to talk about is, like, you know, some of the stuff of, like, PBTA and how hard it is for people to get from D&D to PBTA games. Because there's, like, that's where I feel like I see the biggest hiccup or, like, shift that is the biggest hurdle for people to get over. And there is the possibility in a lot of other games that not everybody gets a turn. And I wonder how much of that is behind wanting turn order in a game. Of, like, then it's fair. Then we all, there is a lot of, like, then it's fair.
Right. Well, and I think D&D. So, yeah, the other thing I wanted to bring up then is if you are saying, I want all this stuff where the dice don't come out, or where my planning, whether that's character building or tactical planning, has the ability to overrule the dice, right? And so then we get into the weeds on social rules. Apocalypse World has very explicit social rules for the GM to follow, the MC, sorry. But I think a lot of people maybe will skim through that part and not treat them in rules. And so what is it about social rules, a social contract of, you know, I will be true to the fiction? Why don't people trust that in the way that they trust numbers rules? Is it because the number rule is contained in the physics object of the die, and they don't have to trust anyone? And I mean, that's where you get into, like, GMs fudging rules or fudging dice rolls. Like, yeah, I trust the die if I can see it, but not if it's behind the screen, kind of thing.
Well, it's kind of like, it is an extension of that idea of fairness, or at least of, like, interacting with the same system. You know, I feel like one of the reasons that to me sometimes D&D felt bad when I was playing it a lot was, if there are a lot of rules, like, the value of something like D&D to me is we are all playing by the same rules, you know, and that if that's what we're here for, we're all playing by the same rules. So I know that if I study up and I play this for 100 years, I will have this single character that does these things that when the book says, when I'm a rogue and I roll to hide and I succeed, you can't fucking see me. It doesn't really matter if it's nonsensical, right? That is what the book says. This is what I've been trying to do. This is, we are all bound by this central system. And that's where I think people get into, like, very bad expectations of fairness, but also where it's just a, like a play style that I'm not interested in, because if I don't, one, I inherently do not trust the developers of D&D, right? And to offload all of my trust to the developers of D&D seems weird, as opposed to just play games with people that I trust.
Right.
You know, like there's this weird, like if I'm playing a game with somebody and I think they're going to do shitty things, it doesn't matter how good the system is. I don't want to play games with those people.
Right.
But I feel like so frequently when I was playing a lot of D&D, it was like, oh, well, that's not fair. That doesn't make sense. Like these are the kind of sentiments that I feel like come up as grudges in D&D and other kinds of game, other role-playing.
There's a whole, yeah, there's a whole other subreddit called RPG Horror Stories. That's just like,
oh my god,
yeah.
I was gonna bring it up also. It's so intense, and a lot of it is like really horrific, but like a lot of it is like, was this fair? Was this the right call? Did they make, you know, like is this right. Like kind of the way that people argue about sports. And I can't imagine playing, like I can because I used to, but I can't now really imagine like playing D&D like it's a sport. You know, like you don't win role-playing games. And the idea that there's some fair, there is a fair underlining rule system is kind of in the service of winning. In my mind, those things are kind of like connected.
Yeah.
And then you try and take that to something like Apocalypse World or whatever, where the goal is tell a cool story, bro, which is very different.
Yeah. Yeah, and like even like social, you know, if we say that PBTA stuff offloads rules onto like social expectations or narrative, maybe is a better word, expectations. I mean, every day I go outside and I see people breaking social rules that I thought were, you know, universal or implicit. And so I get maybe not feeling like that is the way to quote unquote fix games. But I'm not playing games with the old white guys who are rude to me at the game store. I actively try to avoid that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I do feel like, I don't know, the social rules element is like an interesting part where I feel like I see a lot of people go in like two different, very different directions, which is like there is no social contract. The social contract is defined by the game, you know, in a lot of D&D cases. That's what I feel like it is. Like the social contract is offloaded to the rules of D&D. And then there's like some extension of that, which is, oh, I'm going to do session zero and we're going to talk about our expectations. And talking about your expectations is not actually defining a social contract. Just, there's a whole lot of like, if we just talk about our expectations, people will like respect those. And that's just also not true. And I don't know, there's something in the opposing, there's like a brain, whatever, I might be ill right now. There's a brain thought that is not fully coming to fruition about like the counter design that comes from not wanting the social contract to be written by the book and therefore being very like, we're going to discuss how you interact with one another as humans, that I both, like I think is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it can't be good. Like I'm.
Yeah. I want to say too, I think D&D does that. It just hides it. Like the social expectations implicit in D&D are you will roll the dice at certain times in certain ways, maybe so that everyone can see, or maybe sometimes so that certain people cannot see. You will respect the result of the dice. You won't see a die roll and go, no, actually, you know, like that's what you're saying about the hiding thing, right? There is a social expectation that you will stick to those results. I don't know.
I think that, which I think is like, and obviously I'm working this out as we're talking about it, but like that paired with the GM is the ultimate ruler of the whole world.
Exactly. Going
to
get to that.
Like fails a whole lot. like those two things do not work well together in my mind, because saying we're all bound by this like central logic and the central rule system, except the GM who can break the rules whenever they want and is effectively God of this game, is the statement that D&D's been making forever and is why you have fucked up power dynamics. And then I feel like there's a lot of games that try to address the fucked up power dynamics of D&D, but those power dynamics aren't inherent in their games. And I always find that tension to be really weird, where it's like you're responding to a problem or you're responding to an issue that you had while playing something like D&D, but your game is nothing like D&D. So like the response is, which I think is actually has happened in a lot of books that we've read, where like the content of the book is so clearly responding to another game and not effectively staying in its corner. Like, like it's, I feel like this was a lot of 13 Age and a lot of games in that era where like you're so clearly responding to D&D and talking about a conversation that's happening in the community, and that is actually like diluting your game, what your game is right. And isn't. But yeah, that power dynamic is super fucked, because the actual social contract is that like all four or five of you that are sitting at a table are all human beings that have the same, should have the same impact on the game you're playing together, even if that means in the fiction you have different roles, you know?
Yeah.
But I once... It reminds me once when I was in my grad program, I made a comment about, I was talking about BDSM and gameplay and whatever. And
the things you're always talking about.
Things I'm always talking about. Career. And I made some comment about like the negotiation of power dynamics within sex. And somebody in the class asked me a question. They were like, oh, this is just so weird, because I feel like this like never comes up in heterosexual dynamics. Like they're just like not, these conversations aren't present, and like this, it's just like there's just so much more power dynamic happening in the like sexual dynamics you're talking about. And I responded really quickly, because I don't respond well, I guess, to heterosexual people, but and I was like, all sex involves power dynamics. It's just negotiated in this space.
Right.
And I feel like that's how I feel about RPGs, is like all, because it's true of all social interactions, but like they all involve power dynamics. And if you're leaving them unnegotiated, if you're leaving them hidden, then they're going to bite you in the ass.
Or you're benefiting from them and you,
yes,
whether consciously or subconsciously, want to keep them hidden so yes, that you continue to benefit from them. Yeah.
And I feel like that's the, I don't know. I feel like that's where most of my shitty D&D experiences have come from, that one instance. And then the using of like that one experience where there is a power dynamic at play, and that power dynamic is not going, it's not being explained or exposed, and thus is, and then is being, and then the rule system is being used to enforce that power dynamic, not to make it equal or to make it more equitable, you know? And so that's, and that's why it's like the every, you know, cis white het whatever GM is then enforcing those rules willy-nilly, because they've been given all the power and don't understand that like it feels bad when you use power in specific ways, because of course they wouldn't understand that it feels bad for everybody else when you use power in specific ways. And I feel like there is also this, like, this is so in the weeds, but there's also this, like, the reason that a lot of GMs are cis white het guys is because those are the people that are very comfortable in that role of, here, you have all the power, you get to make all the choices. You know, it's like, it's not just that we, there is this, the culturally, we kind of enforce that that's where they should be, but that's also, it's also just like, a lot of people are very uncomfortable with the idea that you should make all the choices about other human beings, and they don't volunteer. You know, yeah. Like there's not, there's all this stuff at play there. And it feels, it always feels really silly to like talk about all that stuff being at play, because it's just a game or whatever.
Well, but games are serious.
Yeah. Kind of. Serious. Yeah. They can be. At
the right well, least. I think a big part of the apocalypse world principles and rules are, you are going to have all this power. It can feel uncomfortable. like, here are the ways to use it so that it's fun for everyone, or so that everyone who has bought into this setup is enjoying it. Stuff like be a fan of the players, be a fan of the characters, play to find out what happens, you know, like it's trying to say, here is a kind of play that expects someone to be in power over certain things. Here are the ways to use that power so that it's not necessarily you have power over this, but you have power in a separate channel, you know? I'm not saying that it solves any of the problems or anything, but I think it is aware of those differences and is trying to respond to them.
Yeah, I think I think it's solving some of them, but that's just a personal thing. I think at least it's trying to like acknowledge the existence of some of the problems, and it's like taking a stab at solving them. Whether or not it's effective, I think, is a different thing. But I think that for me, that like all of the role of a referee versus the role of the GM, to me, are fundamentally different roles. And I feel like that might be part of the hiccup in moving from something like D&D to something like an Apocalypse game. Because I think about, and I'm curious about your experience and input on this, but I think about the difference that I feel as somebody who spent a lot of my life GMing and has spent a lot of my time refereeing and running other game systems. They feel like, I always felt like a really shitty GM because I was playing D&D and I didn't have really long plots that I could keep straight in my mind, knowing that like if you pissed this person off, that these three other people would be pissed off and that might affect the end game of whatever module or whatever thing I'd planned out. Like it felt like too much to hold in my mind, all of the constantly designing and redesigning of the branching structure that players were moving through, largely because I was under the impression that it was wholly my responsibility to make sure that no matter what happened, it came to a logical conclusion that had kind of on some level already been pre-designed.
Yeah.
And trying to squish the chaos that players will bring to the table into one of three or four outcomes doesn't always work. You know, and it's just a lot. And then and doing that simultaneously while being compelling, while being in character, while adding, you know, like while coming up with all of this stuff on the spot, always felt really overwhelming for me. And so I spent a lot of my time being like, oh, well, I'm just a shitty GM, whatever. And then I started playing games that weren't D&D and was like, oh, wait. Maybe I'm not a shitty GM. Maybe D&D is bad, actually. And part of that is just that I feel like it is a whole different game role. I don't feel like it is the same. I do not feel like if you are the person who GMs D&D comfortably, you are necessarily going to be very good at refereeing PBTA. In fact, I think probably you're not going to be for a while. Because what I feel like the role of refereeing in PBTA games is, and also just like a lot of other games, is like being the random generator that the characters are rolling on. On some level, like you're not always trying to make one. You're not trying to squish everything into the outcome, but it feels very reactive refereeing as opposed right. to proactive, which is what DMing feels like. Like as a D&D DM, your responsibilities are largely to get the characters to the big evil guy at the end to make sure they have a like huge heroic combat that they are going to win, because if they don't, that usually is a failure state of the whole game. And not that it always is, but it's often a big, like you go into a big epic battle, and I don't think I've ever gone into a big epic battle in D&D, either running it or playing it, where people actually considered the outcome a failure.
Right.
Like there wasn't.
You've been
like,
playing for 5 years and your characters all die.
Yeah. And session. Like we're like, we rely on the system. And if this is, that's why people fudge roles, right? Is because players would be so pissed if all their characters died that they've been playing for 5 years that are level 13.
But they don't want to win super easily.
Mm-mm. It is a weird, it is a towing the line of a very specific unpleasant math.
Yeah.
And that's not what I've always felt like the job of other game running is, where it is much more about reacting to the story the players are telling and encouraging them to create more story, like encouraging them to create their own outcomes and like effectively being a mirror upon which you like you throw as much as you can back at the players, which is so different than the internal logic of D&D in my mind. And one of the big like hurdles that I feel like people have a hard time getting over when switching.
And I think one thing too that I like about PBTA that is also difficult to GM is, I mean, so first, like both PBTA and OSR stuff. Have we defined PBTA, Powered by the Apocalypse? I don't know if we need to every episode. OSR is like old school revival kind of, but it's not necessarily how people played in the 70s, but it's how people want, you know. But both of those principles have this idea of like creating problems or situations, not solutions, which places a lot more agency in the players than there's this bad guy, eventually you will have to fight them. You know, both of these are more like these people are in dispute. You have agency in the situation. You can address this dispute and affect the outcome. What do you do kind of thing? Play to find out what happens. But I think also in PBTA stuff, like, so when you roll a six or less, the GM can make a move as hard as they want. And that's like a rule. And sometimes that just means like you take one damage. But sometimes it can be a lot harsher as well. And I think leaning into that harshness in a way that the fiction demands, that the narrative demands, and that the, helps with the pacing can be like really scary. Like you were talking about, it's a high trust situation in a place where a lot of people have not navigated that trust. And so the example I think of that I will try to use to illustrate this is in Friends of the Table, there is an episode where they're all playing criminals. I think it's Blades in the Dark. And like this cop shows up and has kind of the high ground, has the power in the situation. And it's like a big crazy train heist. The players are obviously criminals. And one of the players tries to be like, oh, hey, cop, I know you. Like, let's not get hasty. And Austin, the GM, is like, he shoots you. And the player's like, whoa, what? I mean, can't we negotiate? And Austin is trying to explain, like, this isn't like use a persuasion role to charm this person, right? This is like closer to real life. We're playing this kind of scrappy criminal game. You all are obviously engaged in this criminal action. This guy is also an evil cop that's waiting for any excuse to shoot you, criminal scum. Like, we can rewind this if you want to try to do something other than negotiate, but if you just stand in front of him vulnerable, that's what, you know, that's what this fiction demands. That's what this character we've seen before would do. And that's scary. And it can feel harsh if everyone is kind of like not aware that that's how this conversation of gaming works.
Yeah, you can lose.
Well, and you know, he wouldn't shoot him dead, but you would take a big wound, and then what do you do? Stuff like that. And ideally, you know, if things are going bad, eventually a roll would happen and you would get to slink away or you would turn the tables kind of thing. But that rhythm is like a much higher and lower waveform than D&D, where you're just trading a few dice of damage back and forth. Like, you could get shot and are bleeding out, and then you make this great roll and you get to pick the result. I change the scene and you describe how you're in a hospital now and you have to heal and you're planning your revenge or whatever. Stuff that happens in movies, but rarely happens in kind of classic D&D.
Yeah. I want to like latch directly on to, and then you're in a hospital. You make a roll and then you're in a hospital, because one of my big things about like, at one point we were like, let's talk about PBTA moves. Like, let's talk about this whole structure of the move. Because yes. I feel like it carries, it is the thing that I hear people have the hardest time understanding or switching to. And one, that's because Dungeon World is bad and most people are exposed via something like Dungeon World that is just trying to translate D&D to Apocalypse World, which doesn't work very well, in my opinion. But also because they function very differently. Because every, I mean, they do a lot of things, but one of the things that they do is like change the fiction in a significant way. Yes. And 50% of D&D roles do not change this fiction in a significant, at least right. 50%, right? Because even succeeding in your action, right? If we take combat as a microcosm of D&D at large, is like, well, generally the math works out that like if you roll above a 10, you're off and something's going to happen. And if you roll below a 10, you're probably going to fail or whatever. And then there's a bunch of shit added on top of that in order to make it seem like it's harder, but you're still just kind of rolling above a 10. Oh, the AC yeah. went up by 2, so did your fucking base attack bonus or whatever.
And if you roll under a 10, often nothing happens. It does not change the fiction in certain situations.
That's it. Like if you roll
and
under
if you
a
roll
10,
above a 10, oftentimes it means you are safe and nothing changes.
Yeah, or you wound them and you're one step closer to changing the fiction, but the fiction doesn't really change until something significant happens, like a number of wounds or a big enough wound or whatever, right? Like you're in yeah. this moment, and that's, and I think that shift between like it, every move has a significant impact is missed a lot. And so like some of the I played a lot of D&D, and then I shifted and I played a bunch of PBTA at like conferences or conventions, and I hated it. And part of like, right, like I didn't like it. I am also the person who had a very hard time figuring out what was good about it. And part
right,
of
so
that,
we're not coming at you, listener.
Yes.
As, why are you messing up on
people
this so
have
often?
A hard time. I am people. Yeah. And it's because I didn't get that. And the people I was playing with didn't get that. And it was very much so, well, I'm going to make a move that it mimics a single attack in D&D. And PBTA games fail so miserably if that's your goal. Like if your goal is to like every 8 seconds roll, PBTA move structures suck at resolving that specific of a moment. And because they are meant to have this like huge, large impact. And so like you can have a whole combat resolved with one roll, but that I think for people who, or you can avoid a potential large combat with a roll. You know, like there's lots of ways in which something that could have taken an entire session in a D&D can be over in 10 minutes in PBTA. And I think that is a thing that people don't always get. So try to like squish it in and then end up having to come up with really big consequences or really unique consequences, and that can be really hard. Because I saw a tweet the other day that was like, coming up with like successes with consequences can be really difficult, and I'm like, it's only really difficult in my mind if you have to do it back to back to back to back,
right?
If we're in a
if
combat,
you have to do 20 of them in combat,
yeah,
that's different than
which
two
is,
or three.
Which is the D&D, like where D&D gets boring to me. I don't find like big combats really compelling because I don't need to describe, you know, the way in which my sword glints off their fucking armor or what, again, the third time in the last 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And so if you're playing it like
I
that,
will
I can
also
see it being
say
hard.
The consequences stuff is hard, but any good PBTA book has a list of them for you in the GM section. That is so easy to skip over because many books GM sections are boring or bad or both. But the good PBTA books have a GM section that will have a list of moves for you to make. And often will describe like, oh, if it's just a soft move, if it's a 7-9 or people aren't sure they're in danger, here are ways to use it to hint that the danger is getting bigger or to inflict a small consequence. And if you're in the shit, you should be making these moves as hard as you want, doing a lot of damage, doing something big. And, you know, the list is there. I think the difficult part is not the imagination part. Oh, what happens in this situation? What item do they drop or whatever, but the taking the reins of the narrative exchange part and saying, yes, this thing happens.
Yeah.
I personally might feel bad about it, but your important shit got stolen right now because, you know, these are the rules of the game. Hopefully we are all on board on them. I will take a moment to explain why this happened if you're confused, but like,
also
make bad things happen because then people get to overcome them. I don't know.
Yeah, well, make a bad thing happen, but also because, like, what I'm signing up for when I'm signing up for playing something like a PBTA game with you, Aaron motherfucking King, is that I would like your creativity and your input and your narrative flair to impact the play space that we're in. And so when I, a player in this context, am going to say, actually, here's the thing that I want to accomplish, and then I roll a failure, what I explicitly want is for you to be like, here's the weirdest or most fucked up failure I can think of.
Right.
Because that's why I'm signing up to play a game with you. And if that's not what you're signing up for, I don't think you should be playing, you know? Like, yeah. If you're not signing up for the specific people that, and they might be strangers, you might be signing up for, I would like to see what a bunch of strangers come up with in this context. You don't have to be a known outcome for you to be excited about what that could look like.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where a lot of people take that. They're like, well, but like, I don't know what they're going to come up with. And it's like, right, but that surprise is part of the reason you play these games. But what you are sitting down for is that person's specific, unique input on the fiction. And I think that's not true in D&D. It can be, but it's definitely not a required bar to entry when you think about, like, well, here's this module that actually has very little creative room in it. I'm actually not looking for your I'm not looking for Aaron's impact on this. I'm looking for Aaron to make somebody else's creative output colorful,
which is to me much harder thing.
yeah so well, hard.
I will also say, like, you know, a common GM move in PBTA is like, take something from them. You know, they fail a roll, take something from them. The bad guy grabs their gun. The bad guy steals their kid, whatever. In D&D, if I steal your Staff of the Magus, that like destroys your whole character build, and then you're just rolling poorly for the rest of a long fight. But because of what you were saying earlier about the narrative impact of roles in PBTA, I might steal that. They might have a role that has them change the situation. And then we cut forward to a week and there's like a crazy heist and you get it back. Like, there are, you don't have to make, just like I only needed one bad roll to take that thing from you, you only need one or two bad rolls or good rolls to kind of take it back or turn the tables. It's not like D&D where if something goes wrong, it's just less fun. Like, it's not a slow descent towards zero hit points. It's, you know, the exciting part in Fast and the Furious where they capture one of the family and it's like, now we gotta get them back, and it's like, this is exciting, now we're all on this together, you can make good plans, you can do these roles to read the situation, and it's fun to me, I think.
Yeah. And it goes,
but a lot of that is like system mastery. Like, I don't want to brag, but we have talked about, like, oh, I played 10 years playing D&D, I've now spent many years running this stuff. And I have learned a lot, and I did bounce off them initially, and I have run bad games. And so I don't want to make it sound like you just got to get good, but you kind of do just have to get good, just like any skill, you know, but it can be fun to be bad, just like it can be fun to be bad at drawing. But
well, and that's like, that's why I do think it is literally a different job. Like, I do think that refereeing a PBTA game is a different job than GMing D&D. And people who have GM'd D&D for years think they are GMs of all games for the most part. And it's just like so incorrect. And a lot of that often can like come from, I'm used to being in control and I want to continue to be in control of what's happening. I want to have a bigger impact. I'm like used to being in this position. And like, you know, frequently my challenge to that is like, oh, maybe don't do that for like 10 years. If you're used to doing that, maybe take a whole year, a whole many years off of doing that. But
yeah,
I do think that speaks to me about like what I feel like, and I don't have as much, I don't have PBTA mastery. I'm in my middling PBTA era. But like when it started to click for me, it was an understanding of scale, of mechanical scale, right? Like the stories can be whatever scale you want, but that when I started to understand how to like craft and or respond to a PBTA move was when I understood that like they're just bigger. They are mechanics that are meant to deal with a big chunk of the story as opposed to a little tiny chunk of the story, which is what I was used to. And part of that came from like trying to write PBTA moves, which it's a thing that I think everybody who is playing PBTA should do, like try to write some moves. It's hard, in fact.
But it's also really fun, like because they can be so big and weird.
Yeah, they can be super weird, which is also like, which isn't to say they can't be super specific, right? Like the scale of their impact is not, doesn't mean they need to be broad. In fact, I think that like one of the things that I notice with PBTA games I don't like is that their moves are generic. Mm-hmm. And that lack of specificity, which I think is people's attempts to try and cover bigger sections of play, really, really ruins a lot of the game design. We were going to do a Hall of Fame and a Hall of Shame of moves.
We still might.
We still might. But I do feel like
didn't get that far into my prep because I was so in the weeds on responding to imaginary Reddit guys.
I like, you should just have a whole episode that's you just responding to Reddit. I would listen to you reading out and then responding to Reddit posts.
We can be the old my brother and me of RPG podcasts where we just answer Reddit questions.
I'm in. We'll be so judgmental. But I do feel like part of that is the point of the moves is to help, is to make it so that coming up with consequences isn't difficult. You know, like it's not like if you're playing a game and you keep having this moment of people keep rolling 7 to 9s. I keep having to come up with consequences. I'm finding it really difficult. One, probably you need to scale out the scope of fiction that you're interacting with that move. And two, you might be playing a bad PBTA game that doesn't have moves that are actually helping you. Like if the move doesn't help solve or present you with a number of consequences as options, then in my mind, it's not a very well-written move.
Right. It's to me very rare that a PBTA move, I mean, a lot of them say on a 6, look to the GM what happens. Mm-hmm. Which I then think is when the GM feels like, oh no, I have to come up with something new and original. Maybe that's part of it too. It doesn't have to be new and original. There's a list literally that you can look at. It's your invitation to say, oh, all these cool things that excited me about the worlds, like now I get to put them in the game. And you know, it doesn't even have to be bad. So many good PBTA failures are you get what you want and also here's the bad guy, or you get what you want and it's bad news. You're searching about your mysterious past. Yeah, you find out about it, but your dad is evil now, just like a lot of dads.
Just like all dads.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to say, oh, if you think it's hard, you're wrong. You just have to do better. But I do wonder like what that piece is. I see people every time I've played an RPG with someone, people like introduce wild original things. So I think maybe you're right that it is the expected rate of that wild original introduction thing.
And I think fear of just letting things happen. Right? Like I think there's like a two thing, like the rate of it to me is directly tied to, oh, well, you just don't get to say what you do. Which is kind of the D&D brain thought, right? Like you just don't get to say what happens. And in a lot of PBTA, you do in fact just get to say what happens. Like a player, referee, it doesn't matter who you are. You do frequently get to say what happens. You are frequently in control of the narrative. And it's only in specific moments that the mechanics might interrupt that.
Right. But you have principles that I think, it can be scary, but I think if you take the principles seriously, I'm looking at the Veil playbooks right now because that was what I had on this computer. Give them a chance to think. Spotlight everybody. These are like principles that the GM has in this game. And so it can be hard to keep track of all those and internalize them. Have a sheet in front of you. Take a second to think. I don't know. And all, not all, so many PBTA games that I've read have, as your optional GM move, give them what they want. Or the veil has give them recourse, solace, or comfort. Like, you can just say, oh, this is a bad time. But, like, you just get what you want because you're being true to the fiction, maybe in those moments. I don't know. It's all right. I believe in you. You can run these games.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're bad. I'm saying if you're having a really hard time, it might be the game. You know, like, I feel like there are a lot of not so great PBTA games out there. And so if it's not scaffolding you, if it's not, this is of all games, if the game isn't scaffolding you, isn't supporting you in the kind of play you want to make, if a game isn't making it easier to play a game, then it's not a very good game, you know?
Or, like, it's not the game for you. Like, some people also need different scaffoldings.
Totally.
And so, I mean, there are some, I think, that just offer no scaffolding, and I'm willing to call that a bad game, but also, you know, some people really vibe with a bunch of random tables. I love a bunch of random tables. Other people get overwhelmed by that and don't want to think about rolling all these dice or finding the right table. For them, a small list of options is, like, better. I don't know.
Yes. I also think that if it's one of those, like, if you're used to playing D&D, then you absolutely can figure out how all of these games are less work than D&D. Like, all of them are less work than, I have never met a game that is as much work as D&D. If the feeling is, oh, this is a lot of work, it's probably because you can't see how much work you're putting into playing D&D, you know?
Yeah.
If printing out a little sheet of GM moves feels like, no, but I wish I just knew what I was doing. It's like, how many pages do you need to run a D&D session?
Right.
Because I think that's, like, an unseen, like, once you're deep in it, you're like, oh, this doesn't feel like a bunch of moves. It doesn't feel like a bunch of work because I have already, you know, put in hundreds of hours.
I have my 20 pages of campaign prep or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we wrap up? Do we need to make a definitive statement based on all of the evidence we've presented? Do we want to recommend a book or something?
I mean, yeah. I feel like, is there, I mean, it's hard because the answer is Patchwork World, but besides your own game, which you made directly, like, my understanding of your path to Patchwork World is, I don't want to play D&D anymore. I like PBTA, but I want to replace my D&D jam a little bit with PBTA.
Yeah.
And so if you want to play D&D, but it's, you want, like, to get away from it.
It's just like Dungeon World.
Yeah, except good. I don't like Dungeon Worlds. One of those weird things where, like, one of the reasons I don't like it is because it just transfers so many concepts, so many literal design elements and mechanisms from D&D over into PBTA, and I don't think they work, right? Like, I don't, maybe someday we're going to have a chat about this, but, like, I don't like hit points in PBTA.
Yeah,
because they are opposed to the whole scope and scale conversation to me, right? Like, it's so, the reason that some, I think that some PBTAs do like conditions is because that's a bigger, like, that is zoomed out. That is that is a mirror of the rest of the ethos of the mechanics of PBTA in my mind, of, like, zooming out a little bit, you know? It's not game play by 1,000 cuts. And so games that have that, I often am like, I don't enjoy this. I find that looking back, like, those are the things that kind of tripped me up when trying to adjust outside of D&D, when trying to, like, get out of D&D. It was like, oh, well, if it has all these familiar concepts, I'll have an easier time getting into it. And I actually think it's a harder time because they're so at odds with where they originally come from, you know?
I think D&D is like a teen romance movie, and Dungeon World is 10 Things I Hate About You, starring Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger.
So many people love that movie,
and I think it's a good movie. I enjoy it, but 10 Things I Hate About You does not teach you to read Shakespeare, because 10 Things I Hate About You is, like, you know, inspired by a modernization of The Taming of the Shrew, which I like. I think people should do that. It's fun to be like, look, some Shakespeare plots still have relevance to us today. but it doesn't teach you to read Shakespeare. It just says, like, here are the ideas that are in Shakespeare that are similar to the things you're used to. And I think Dungeon World does that. It's like, look, here's some parts of Apocalypse World, but we'll put it in D&D terms. And it doesn't actually kind of help you get away from D&D that much.
Yeah, it just helps you play shittier D&D.
What's Julia Stiles been up to? I hope she's happy.
Yeah. So if not Patchwork World, what do you think?
I was just going to say, like, read a book that you wouldn't normally read. Like, to me, a lot of this is also tied up in, like, I mean, to use the Shakespeare thing, like, classics, old books use different structures and language. Or, like, if you only read fiction, read some nonfiction. Or if you only read prose, read poetry or a comic book kind of thing. Like, I think getting out of those comfort zones, and I'm not saying you have to finish it, I'm not saying you have to like it, but I think you can, it's good to stretch those little brain muscles and give them things you're not used to. And you might learn things from that stuff, or you might be like, this sucks, I'm not going to read any more of it, but I kind of understand what they were going for.
I do think if D&D is Lord of the Rings, then PBTA is graphic novels. I do think that's a fine parallel. Where it's like, here's every single small shitty detail you could think of, and here's only the things that matter.
And there's lots of bad comic books out there. Just like there can be bad Powered by the Apocalypse games.
What's your favorite Powered by the Apocalypse game?
I mean, I want to say, I think top three, Apocalypse World is just good. Like, it has a thesis and it does it. Pasión de las Pasiones is like a huge step away from a lot of that stuff. And kind of a restructuring. And, I think The Veil has my favorite playbooks. Mm-hmm. I was running The Veil for some people, one of them who had only played D&D, and she was like, my character feels too powerful. And I was like, is that, like, what's the problem? Is there, you know, she's like, well, if I take this move, it looks like I can just teleport anywhere, right? And I was like, yeah, you know, there's a role involved, but you will still just be teleporting around. She's like, yeah, that seems too powerful for just starting out the game. And so I love that a lot of the Veil playbooks are just like, you can do this crazy thing right out of the gate if you want to.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. I need to play more of the Veil. I mean, again, Patchwork World, my favorite. I do think that one of the ways in which to, like, jumping off of the reading, read different books is, like, one, I think that a lot of PBTA games use too many words for sure, which we've said before, but actually do kind of require that you read the whole thing in a way that...
Which can be hard, yeah.
Yeah, and in a way that D&D doesn't, right? Like, you can play D&D with a player's handbook. You don't need the GM's guide or whatever. And you certainly do not need to read the GM's guide back to back to run it. And you don't need to read the PHB back to back to run it. And I do think that that is part of why people skip all of the, like, GM or referee moves, is because they are in the sections that you're used to, like, skimming or whatever. And really, actually, all of the gameplay advice, all of the understanding, all of the explanation is usually in those sections in PBTA, and the rest of it can kind of be ignored or used at will.
Right.
But also, read a bunch of moves and try and write one. Because...
Yeah, since class is in session, if you want to join our Discord and do homework, and I mean this as a joke, but also seriously, we won't be grading you. But, like, if you want to participate in this, write a move. Come hang out in our Discord and show us your move. I'll write one. Write a move month was recently that people were, like, writing a move a week. So if you did that, come hang out with us, show us that. But, like,
yeah. Maybe we'll do Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame
in the Discord assignments. Yeah. If you want to hang out and read some good moves and bad moves and try to write one, and we'll workshop with you if you want. Like, we're not saying do this in a vacuum. We'll hang out. We'll make it fun.
I've recently started writing a bunch of games that are all moves. So I'm deep in it. And I think maybe I want to put this forward for us, is that I think we should in the near future cover one of the Belonging Outside Belonging games.
Yeah.
Because I want to understand, both personally because of things that I'm working on, but also just because I'm curious about these things, how these ideas start to work when you take dice out of the picture. Like, what are some of the core fundamental concepts of this kind of design, but without dice?
Yeah, I like it. Because if we're talking about disclaiming decision-making as a core thing of PBTA stuff, if we're talking about like, oh, you're used to rolling dice instead of making a decision, now you just have to make a decision.
Yeah.
In Apocalypse World, there's still dice. You're still disclaiming some of that decision-making. But in Dream Askew or whatever, there's no dice.
It's really like, is there a degree of empowerment you don't want in your game?
Right. Like, and so, sometimes I don't want that empowerment. Sometimes my brain is dead. I literally
never played BOB games. Like I played one at a con and really enjoyed it, but like I never went back. Like I didn't play it and then was like, yes, I want to play more of these, right? Like I've read some of them. I've never picked them up to play it. I like dice. But yeah. I'm trying to understand how these concepts can be adapted to be without dice. And I feel like that's kind of where they live. Somebody has already answered this. Somebody has answered, how do these work without dice? Many very good designers have in fact already tackled this question. And so I would like to expose myself to them.
Yeah. 2024, high trust play.
Ugh. Woof. I don't know. Not you. Couldn't be us.
We're going to set some boundaries. I don't know.
That's what we got. We're going to set some boundaries.
Yeah. Read a book. Set some boundaries. Write a move. That's your homework assignment. I've never really taught. I know that you have taught a lot, so I feel weird telling people to give homework.
I guess it's my whole jam. Usually I'm like, try something new. Do what you want and then show that you did some form of work.
Yeah. When I was living near where I grew up, I did this thing, academic decathlon, when I was in high school, like competitive test taking. And after high school, for a while, I was living near where I grew up. And my old teacher was like, do you want to help me teach academic decathlon? And I said, sure, I've never really taught before, but I'll do it. And it was it was fine. But I was like, oh, I definitely don't know how to teach. That was the one thing. That was the first thing I learned. And then so I was living in this nearby city called La Crosse that was bigger than the small town. Once I was there, out and about, and the kids I was teaching saw me, and they're like, Aaron, you look like a bum. I got fucking roasted by high schoolers. So, you know, don't trust me. If you're listening to what I'm saying and you're like, this sounds stupid, just, I look like a bum. Don't worry about it.
I don't know. I feel like the thing about teaching is like you just are creating the conditions where people, I would say that you do in fact know how to teach, because you're creating the conditions where people feel comfortable exploring their own learning, because anything that's actually based in testing is kind of bananas unless you're talking about like hard sciences or whatever. Right. I don't teach anything that involves like facts, you know, like I teach in creative school environments. So
I did see you say the other day, the student's better at Unity than I ever was.
100%. There are, you do frequently, I feel like in a university context, you do occasionally come up against students just being better at the thing you're teaching than you are. Because people are better at some things than other people.
Right. Well, and like teaching art is not the same as being good at art.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah.
I am terrible at art. No. I think I'm actually better at art than I sometimes am at teaching it, but I'm working on it. Yeah, I do. And so I do think that like a lot of that is just like, come and hang out and feel comfortable exploring. I think when moves are well written, like this is why I keep saying like I'm in my PBTA era, because I think that when moves are well written, which granted not all of them are, they are a significantly better, and I will just be like, I will just value this, whatever. I'm clearly fine making statements about what's better and worse. They are just better game design tech than most other game design tech.
Right. There's a sense of like density and prose quality to a well-written move.
Mm-hmm. And also like that whole concept of giving like puzzles and problems, like making compelling problems. So many moves have that within them. They are a compelling problem that actually impacts the fiction meaningfully and like impacts the development and the progression of the fiction meaningfully, which I cannot say about most other resolution mechanics. OSR, D&D, whatever, don't do that. Like, it is a thing that to me feels, as far as like the big giant forms, like pillars of game camp or whatever, you know, like I'm sure there's a lot of like, there are a lot of mini individual games and solo games and things that have really that do it. But like, as far as the really big systems, I can't, it feels unique to PBTA that they meaningfully change things in their, like mechanically in their mechanics. So this is why I'm all on board. This is why I will not go back, maybe, for a long time.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I gotta go to the bathroom. I drink too much coffee.
Cool. I also got, I can smell soup.
Ooh, good. PBTA and soup phase.
Yeah, especially since we're all on vacation for a couple weeks, or a week, or a couple days, or whatever. Come hang out. PBTA. Find your favorite move. Share with us your favorite move. I will hunt down some of my favorite moves and put them in the Discord as well.
Yeah. Cool. See you in 2 weeks.
Hooray.